T-Pain Tuesday.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter as always at redrock_beeble. Also make sure you're checking out the Locked On Podcast Network's Twitter account where we have all the info across all 30 teams. Locked On NBA Net. For those of you in the United States, I have to wish all you guys a happy Halloween. Spooky, scary skeletons and shivers down your spine. Shrieking skulls will shock your soul and seal your doom tonight. I had to play that because my son wanted me to play that song. So there you go. Spooky, scary skeletons, enjoy your Halloween, which is should be today by the time you are listening to this. We're going to talk about all of the action from Tuesday's games. We're going to preview a extremely light Wednesday in the NBA. Michael Bolton, it's his Halloween as well.
Let's get to it.
All right, let's get stuck into it by talking about the
monstrous line of the night.
Yes, the monstrous line of the night goes to, oh, there's so many sound drops.
I'm a fun guy.
Yes, Kawhi Leonard of the Toronto Raptors was a monster against the Philadelphia 76ers, 31-7-4, two triples, four steals, 9 of 10 from the line, and 10 of 19 from the field. Kawhi is currently sitting as the 8th best fantasy player this season, averaging 27-8. He is this is the highest points per game he's ever averaged. Obviously, it's only 6 games. He's already sat out 2 due to rest. His efficiency is through the roof. He's hitting his free throws at a high rate. He's at 44% from 3. His numbers are absolutely staggering so far this season. I was pretty big on him heading into the season. I wasn't worried too much about the risk. Obviously, the 2 games missed hasn't been ideal in that regard, but as a second round player, which many people are able to get him, if I was in that position to grab him, I never let him fall to the second round. But if you were able to get him in the second round, I think you'd be pretty happy with how Kawhi has looked on this Raptors team, which put a pretty significant beating on the Philadelphia 76ers. The Sixers rallied in that fourth quarter, but the Raptors get the victory in the end, and Kawhi is absolutely running things for Toronto at the moment. Another big game for him. This is just what we're going to see, I think, as a regular occurrence for Kawhi as the season continues. Big game after big game for Kawhi Leonard, which is great if you did happen to draft him.
Waiver wire line of the night.
The waiver wire line of the night goes to Rocket Rodney Hood of the Cleveland Cavaliers. The Cavs got their first victory of the season. Hood played 31 minutes and he had 26 points. It did come on the old 69% shooting.
Giggity!
So I think we have to have an element of doubt of sustainability there. He added 4 threes, he had a rebound, 3 assists, and the 3 steals. Those high field goal percentage, the high scoring, and the 3 steals really got his numbers over the line and made it look better than perhaps it was. He still is outside the top 150 for this season. I wouldn't be completely overreacting to this performance because, as I said, that sort of shooting is not sustainable, although he is at 46% from the field. 46 is not 69, unfortunately. And he's not going to get steals at that sort of a level. He is a guy that's never topped 1 steal per game in his career, and I don't really think... He's at 1.1 at the moment, which is fine, but you're not going to be getting 1.5, 1.6, which would really boost his value. But as a scoring guy, a 15, 16-point performer, that's a possibility for Rocket, and that can have value under new interim head coach, not interim head coach. The Cleveland Cavaliers, man, I know Danny LaRue says this all the time, that ownership is the biggest equal or competitive disadvantage or advantage in the NBA. The Cavs front office is a disaster. Dan Gilbert and his treatment of GMs over the years. Now he won't. He wants Larry Drew to just take on this interim coaching job without giving him any sort of a pay raise or contract. Just like, you're the assistant, now you're the head coach, just take on this added responsibility. Drew won't do that. I'm glad that Larry Drew is pushing back on that. We had lots of issues or disagreements with Larry Drew from a fantasy perspective when he was the Milwaukee Bucks coach. I'm a bit hesitant in that regard, but good on him for pushing back against Dan Gilbert and his bullshittery that he throws out there pretty much every time that he decides to get involved in things. shout out to Gilbert for getting the Cavs that championship and paying, but man, his management style is an absolute disaster. So we'll see how this all goes for Cleveland, but encouraging from Rocket in the first game under Larry Drew, but we have to look at that. That shooting at a high level is unsustainable, and those steals, even though he has got 6 steals in the last 3 games, I'm not fully convinced that he's going to be able to maintain a high steal rate. Absolutely worth having a look on a 12-team league, whether you can go and grab Rocket and see what might come of it. But I wouldn't be holding down your huge amounts of hope that this is going to be an ongoing occurrence. If your company is looking for a new way to reach customers, you could be mentioned right now. Podcast listeners are 60% more likely to interact with the sponsors they hear on podcasts. And our demographic, you know what it is. It's 98% male, more educated, higher earning than traditional media audiences. So have your company sponsor this podcast by emailing me at redrockfantasybasketball@gmail.com. Let's move on to the Deep League Player of the Night. It goes to Slammin' Sammy Decker, also of the Cleveland Cavaliers. Decker started in place of Kevin Love, as he did last game, and played 29 minutes. 12 points with 2 triples, 9 rebounds, 4 assists, and 3 steals. But like Hood, I'm not getting overly excited. I'm not overreacting, because he took just 6 shots. He had a usage of 9%. He hit 4 of those shots, so 67% from the field. The 9 rebounds is nice. He can be a solid rebounder. 4 assists, I don't really think that's in any way replicable. For the rest of the season, Decker had a combined 3 assists. He also had 3 steals, which boosted his value pretty considerably. And you look at that line, 12, 9, and 4, and 3 steals. That's really, really impressive from Decker. But the last game he started, he had 6 and 5 in 24 minutes. He had the 2 steals again there, and maybe the steals are going to become a thing, because he did have 1 steal in each of the first 3 games this season. But I'm not sure that this sort of performance from Sammy is worthwhile of me, you know, rushing to go and grab him. Again, solid performance. The last start wasn't quite as good, and not a positive performance at all. So I don't really know, you know, what to fully gauge here with Decker. It's encouraging if you did grab him, the fact that he played 29 minutes. That won't necessarily continue. We also have to factor in that it was against the Atlanta Hawks, a team who is very, very poor. And shout out to the Cavs for getting their win, but their first win, but the Hawks are not a good team. So some elevated performances came that way as well. And again, if you've got that streaming spot and you want to add Decker and you look at it and you go, well, that might be of use, but I don't really see him even in the short term being a top 100 player or probably even a top 125 player. There is a lot of fluky elements to this game. The low usage, high shooting combination is not something that's going to stick all the time. The high steals and the elevated assist numbers. Not trying to pour too much hot water on it, but again, he is the deep leaguer of the night because he is only rostered in 2% of Yahoo League. So 16 teams, yeah. 18, yeah. Anything deeper than that, fine. 14, absolutely, go and grab him. For 12s, I'm not so sure about it, but Decker will be the hot priority across the deeper formats after today's game. No doubt about that.
Young Gun of the Night.
This one goes to Mohamed Bamba of the Orlando Magic.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Yes, Bamba had only the 7 points, but he added a 3. He had 7 rebounds as well. 1 assist, 1 steal, and it's the 5 blocks. But like Decker, didn't take any shots. 4 shots, hit 3 of them. So obviously the value here from Bamba comes from the steal, but more importantly, the 5 blocks and the 7 rebounds. He played 24 minutes in this one, as opposed to Nikola Vucevic, who only played the 27 minutes. So Bamba's minutes are on the way up. The last 3 games, he's been at 20, 23, and 24 minutes. But in those last 3 games prior to today, or the last 2 prior to today, he only had the 1 block. And that's really where his fantasy value comes from. He's sitting outside the top 150 at the moment this season, but he is providing 2 blocks per game, which is obviously useful. Just that every other category, he is a below average contributor in. His rebounds can spike. The field goal percentage is impressive. I thought it'd be a little bit lower than that this season. He's hitting his threes at 39%, and he's taking a 2 a game. So that's impressive from Bamba there. And his defense looked pretty good in today's game against the Sacramento Kings. But I'm not here to pencil in Bamba at 25 minutes per night, every night moving forward or even further. We know that, yeah, there is a possibility he could play 28 later in the season. But we also know that Steve Clifford is not the largest lover of rookies around, although he's playing Bamba now. So that's an encouraging sign. If you need blocks, by all means, Bamba is a 12-team league guy just on the basis of getting those 2 blocks per game. He also is massively struggling from the free throw line. He's doing it Clint Capela style, 20% from the free throw line so far this season. Of course, it's a very small sample size. He's 1 of 5 from the line, but he was not a great free throw shooter in college, 60-odd% there. So he could be a negative in that area, especially if teams start focusing on him and looking at him more and sending him to the line. That could become a significant negative. But you know, like these other guys, you know, Hood and Decker that I mentioned, you can have a look at them depending on how your team looks. But I think today might be one of those instances where Bumba's line is inflated, and next game he could play 22 minutes and have one block, and then it doesn't even look like he's a top 200 player. We do have faith that by February, the minutes will be pushing up. I don't think they'll get to 30, but I think they'll push up a bit higher and there'll be use there. I'm just not sure he's going to contribute in enough areas to be really anything more than a block specialist, but obviously very impressive, very useful type performance from Mohamed Bamba in Tuesday's action. I tell a man's not hot. Yes, the man's not hot of the night is another Cleveland Cavaliers player, and that is Larry Nance Jr. Nance, well, we had high hopes for Nance. The front office got rid of Ty Lue, with some of the reasoning being, you know, that he pushed back on the let's play the young guys. Well, cool, that means we're going to get more Nance minutes at center. And Nance has been showing some flashes, showing playmaking ability out of the post, you know, ability to dish these assists, which had been really impressive, but it wasn't a good night from Nance. Still had the assists, still had 3 of them. 9 points, 1 rebound, 3 assists, 3 of 8 from the field, and 3 of 4 from the line. But the most disconcerting thing is he played 16 minutes, while Tristan Thompson played 29 minutes. Now, clearly, Tristan Thompson isn't any sort of, you know, nod to the future on this team, and I really would like to see Nance get that playing time. Averaging only 21 minutes per night so far this season, 10.6 rebounds, 4 assists, and 1.2 steals. On a per 36-minute basis, he's a top 60 player, averaging almost 17 and 10 with 7 assists and 2 steals, and that's always been the appeal of Nance. But I'm going to give Drew a couple more games to see what he does with this front court rotation. Remember, Nance is not someone who is going to play power forward. He has barely played power forward at all this season. He is strictly a center with this Cavs lineup. So don't think, you know, while he is a beneficiary from the Love injury, because yeah, Kevin Love was playing 10% of his minutes at center, yeah, Nance could take those on. And it's also about taking more shots and taking more of that ball handling distribution role that Love did have. He wasn't going to starting at power forward and playing the 32 minutes a night that Love was playing in that position. We just hope that this coaching change, the Love injury, would enable Nance to come in and see if he could work with Colin Sexton, with Chetty Osman, and see how these guys can develop rather than having good old Tristan Thompson out there soaking up 29 minutes. So if I do have Nance, I'm waiting it out. I'm seeing what happens the next couple of games, but if he's kept at 17 minutes a night for the next 2 to 3 nights, then you might want to move on in that sort of a situation. And I don't think it's anything to do with injury related, because 2 games ago against the Pistons, he played 28 minutes. Had 11, 6, and 5. He played 23 minutes last game and had 15, 12, and 4. Today was really disappointing. We would hope the new coach would give him a better run, but I am not dropping him. I am holding, and I just want to see what direction this goes with old Larry Nance. The plus-minus goats, the highest net rating of the day goes to Terry Ferguson of the Oklahoma City Thunder. Billy Donovan was very high in his praise of Ferguson after the game. He was a plus 100.8 net rating, while the worst net rating of the night was Miles Bridges of the Charlotte Hornets. Bridges had played 30 minutes the game before, supplanting Malik Monk, it appeared, but today Monk was the guy who stepped forward, and Bridges really struggled at a negative 85.2 with his net rating. Thankfully, no injuries to report from today's game. No major news coming down, so that's always a positive sign. De'Aaron Fox was battling a back problem, but played through the game. He looked limited, but he was able to play. So that was on a back-to-back, so that's a positive. So thankfully, we didn't really have any injury concerns in these games today, and that is always a positive thing. Let's move into these games now, break them down with a little bit of extra detail as we do in this portion of the show. The first game we look at is the Kings and the Orlando Magic. The Kings, winners of 4 straight on a back-to-back in Florida. Huge victory, and Buddrick Hield looks fantastic. 25, 11, and 3 in 39 minutes. Amazing that giving this guy a ton of minutes is actually working well for the Kings. His shooting has always been really, really strong, but he's adding other things, rebounding, assists, getting to the line. 6 free throw attempts is massive. This is a guy that barely got to the line, and his high free throw percentage, if he could just gotten there 3 or 4 times a game, it would have really elevated his value, and we're seeing that now. Of course, he shouldn't be sitting on any waiver wires. When Bogdan Bogdanovic comes back, maybe that impacts Hield a little bit, but there's a gaping hole at small forward. Troy Williams and Justin Jackson filled it today. Yuck. Iman Shumpert's been in that spot. So there is room for Hield and Bogdanović to clearly, you know, work together. And Hield's minutes are pushing up. And I've given a lot of shit to Dave Jaeger, but he's actually realizing, let's give our better players more minutes. Big minutes for Bard, big minutes for De'Aaron Fox, big minutes for Nemanja Bjelica, bigger minutes for Willie Cauley-Stein, really starting to push forward, which is impressive. As for Bjelica, 21-8, two steals and a block. Any games that are close, he's going to play 30 minutes. He's going to be productive. He's had a habit of you're doing this before and then having the ass completely fall out of it. But for now, you have to have him. You just have to. Maybe Marvin Bagley jumps up at some point. But Bagley only 23 minutes, 10-9, two threes, a steal and a block. Still well-rounded production. If there's someone red hot out there on the wire that you want to grab, go and do it. But Bagley is producing enough to be just held on to, just to see what happens over these next couple of weeks. Because 10-9 with two threes, a steal and a block is good enough production for 12-team formats. Justin Jackson remains one of the worst players in the NBA. 0 points in 20 minutes, while Cauley-Stein had 14-11, and his big season continues. It wasn't De'Aaron Fox's best night, but still 14-2-5. Is nice. And I do have to give a quick mention to Troy Williams. He is a two-way player. He had some moments with the Knicks a couple of years ago. He was on the Pelicans at one point and they cut him in the preseason. 12-5, two blocks and two threes for Troy Williams. As I said, there's a gaping hole there at small forward. He's probably already better than Justin Jackson. But we do have to remember that Iman Shumpert was out and Williams is a two-way guy. So he's not necessarily going to be able to do this all that regularly. But in deeper leagues, just pay some attention to Troy because he has been a guy in the past that can contribute from a fantasy perspective. Interestingly, Yogi Ferrell out of the rotation with Frank Mason getting all of those minutes. Let's monitor that. And of course, Harry Giles out of the rotation as well. The Magic as Gordon bounce back with a Richie Beno.
2 for 2, 2, 2.
Two threes, two steals, two blocks, 18 and 10. He'd have been a couple of down games for Az, but good to see him bouncing back. Still can't hit threes, and I just don't think he ever will be. Okay, he hit two of them, sorry. He can't hit them well, 29% from three. Well, Vooch, despite the big Bumba game, 15-5 for Vucevic with a steal and a block. You cannot complain about that. John Isaac was disappointing, 9-3 in 25 minutes. Terry Ross got hot. He had 17 points with three threes and three steals, and Ross is that three-pointer steals-type streaming option. I'm still holding Isaac. He's had, one or two strong games against the Blazers and the Celtics, and the last couple have struggled. But even last game, he only had 2 points, but still added three blocks. So I am still holding Isaac, even though you're going to have some of these stinkers rolled in there. Evan Fournier had the stinker today, 9 points in 28 minutes, and that some of the lower minutes there was also due to Terry Ross's form. Well, DJ Augustin and Jaren Grant almost split the minutes, but their production was both of them were pretty piss poor. So they're more 14 or 16 team league players. Let's move on to the next game. We're looking at the Atlanta Hawks and the Cleveland Cavaliers. I've talked a lot about the Cavs already. Let's talk Hawks. And the flavor of the month or the day, I guess, for the Atlanta Hawks is Alex Len, who played 27 minutes and had 22-9 with two steals and two blocks. And again, it's one of those lines that sticks out like dog's balls. And you go, whoa, what is this? Do I need to go back and grab Alex Len? Because I dropped the Undertaker, Dwayne Dedman, for him. Or the other way around. I dropped Alex Len to add the Undertaker. But let's look at a couple of things here. Dedman played 16 minutes and had four fouls, so foul trouble limited him. Alex Len also was a perfect 9 of 9 from the field. That 22-9 with two steals and two blocks is really nice, but the two games prior to this, he hadn't gotten over 20 minutes despite being a starter. So I get the feeling we're going to have these ups and downs in both Dedman and Len's performances, but there are a couple of things here that point towards why Len played those minutes. Foul trouble for Dedman, not missing a single shot for Len, so Lloyd Pierce ran with him. So I don't think that it's necessarily, I have to drop Dedman and go and add Len now, because I can see Dedman playing 24-25 next game and Len being at 20. So I don't think this is a quick changing of the guard or anything like that. There were a few reasons why Len played those minutes, in my opinion. Trae Young was great, 24 with 4 assists on 69% shooting.
Giggity!
Plays really well against the Cavs. Obviously, their defense is piss poor. And I do have to mention Jeremy Lin. 24 minutes, 12 points, 8 assists. This is the Jeremy Lin that I thought we could see in the preseason. I thought he was worthy of a late pick because in 25 minutes, he could be a top 100 guy. We haven't seen it at all until today. I'm not saying that all of a sudden this is what he's going to be moving forward, but it was good to see the extra minutes, and it's definitely something to pay attention to. The artist formerly known as Torian Prince fouled out in 26 minutes, 9-4. This is the perfect time to throw that buy low offer at his manager and see if you can get him. The last couple of games haven't been good for Prince. Minutes in the mid-20s. He will bounce back. He will be better. But throw those buy low offers at his manager. While DeAndre Bembry just keeps producing. 7-4-4 in 22 minutes. Production right across the line. He's like a Kyle Anderson type of a player. Low scoring, but contributing in many different categories. We'll get to Kyle Anderson later. Bembry is more of a 14-team league player, but his production's nice. You just have to realize you're not getting much in terms of scoring from him, and that can reduce the overall value. He's the 160th ranked player this season, despite shooting 39-43 as his two splits from the field and the line, and only 8 points per game, just showing what he's actually doing in those other areas and how valuable it can be. Not much else to talk about on the Cavs apart from Chetty Osman, who bounced back. Hopefully you didn't drop him. He's a guy to go and grab if you did. 20 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists. His minutes haven't gone anywhere. He will have efficiency problems. He's got to be grabbed. He has to be on a roster. While Colin Sexton, 28 minutes to George Hill's 20 minutes. Hill did have foul trouble. Sexton had 17, 8, and 3. Got to the line a lot. I think that if I'm choosing between those two, I have Sexton in a 12-team league. He's not a great fantasy producer, not a good three steals or assist type of guy. Efficiency will be an issue, but that's a nice sort of volume type performance from Colin Sexton there. So that's always encouraging, and it's worth just having a look there. Jordy Clarkson had 15 in 27 minutes as well, but I'm not biting on that. J.R. Smith, the plumber, he was out of the rotation with David Nwaba and Kyle Korver getting those backup power forward minutes. Let's move on to the next one now. We've got the Miami Heat and the Charlotte Hornets. The Heat, man, they're in a bit of trouble. Back-to-back losses against the Hornets, against the Kings. Dwayne Wade, on a back-to-back, played 25 minutes and had 19 points with 4 assists. So that's interesting, but I'm not looking to add Wade outside of very, very deep formats. Kelly Olynyk, 14-3-3. The minutes go from 28 to 15 to 21. He's all over the place. He's a fringe 12-team league guy. There is no real timetable on Jim Johnson or Deion Waiters. So that does buoy his value a bit. Same with Scooter Magruder. And he's fine on a 12-team league, but he's not a guy that you have to make sure is on your team. Scooter Magruder had a stinker yesterday, but bounced back 13-3-2. I'd have him over Olynyk at this point. While Joshie Richardson had 15-2-3 and the triple one. Not a great night, but far from a terrible goes to the iron shoulder. Goran Dragic, who had 9-1-3 in his 25 minutes. I was well down on him this season. I couldn't believe he was being drafted in the top 60, top 50 in some places. I don't expect this sort of badness to continue, but it wasn't a good night. Onto the Hornets. Talked about Miles Bridges earlier. He went scoreless in 16 minutes, and Malik Monk picked it up 20 points. But as we always want to do, how did that 20 points come? Well, it came on 70% shooting, and it came with nothing else. So I'm not overreacting to this Monk performance. He still only played 24 minutes. Jeremy Lamb played 19 minutes. And as I've stated pretty much all season, I would rather Monk over Lamb. He just has that upside to get there. Lamb can be a solid enough producer, but in these early 2, 3, 4 weeks of the season, I just want to grab that guy just in case with that higher upside, because if it pushes forward, if he gets to 27 or 28, then he's the big value return, whereas Lamb, best case scenario, is maybe top 100, maybe top 90. That's probably best case for him, and I want to grab a guy who could explode like Monk. Bill Hernangómez back into the rotation over Bismack Biyombo, but just not enough reliability to consider him much. While 14-8 for MKG, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist was solid enough, and he's been impressive this season, but still more of that deeper league guy. Nick Batum, I really liked him from a DFS perspective today, and he delivered on that, 20-7 with a steal and a block. And shout out to Denver Demon, who won today's DraftKings contest. Just got over the top of me. 40-man contest. He came first. I came second. So I'm happy to get a prize there. But shout out to you for winning that contest. And if we're going to talk turning back the clock, Tony Parker had 24 points with 11 assists in 25 minutes. I don't think we should read anything into that. It's a weird performance. I'm not sure it'll happen again for Parker. Just one of those weird anomalous type performances that does happen sometimes across the NBA. Let's go on to the next game, the Philadelphia 76ers and the Raptors. Embiid had 31-11. He was great. He got the Sixers back into the game later on. They lost 112-129, but they got pulled to within 6 with about 4 minutes left in this game. While the Moose, Mike Muscala, 12-5 in 16 minutes. If Embiid goes down, he is the automatic obvious add. And even now, for mid-sized, deeper-type formats, Muscala's producing enough. Hits threes, scoring okay, block shots, although he didn't block any today. Benny Simmons had almost the quadruple double, 11, 8, and 10 with 11 turnovers, far from his best night. While Markel Fultz, against a strong opponent, he was always going to struggle, 19 minutes, 8 and 4. Clearly not a 12-team league guy, and I'm sure nobody listening to this podcast still has him in any 12-team formats. As for Dario Saric, it's been a brutal start to the season. It's basically mirrored the way he ended last season as a guy who couldn't crack the top 140. So far this year, he's ranked 177th. I don't think he's going to be a top 100 guy this year. Now, the shooting is going to improve. He's at 35% from the field, 23% from three. That'll come up. That'll give him a little bit of a hot streak when it does come up, but he's just not doing anything. No defensive numbers. The assists are down. He's not scoring. His usage is well down with Fultz around as well. I think that we're not quite there with him, but we're getting pretty close to Dario Saric as not being a standard league guy. But unfortunately, I don't think I'm ready to say drop on him yet, but man, it's getting bloody close. 8-5-2 is pretty bad. For the Raptors, Lowry, 20 with 12 assists. He is absolutely killing it next to Kawhi. And we've got to talk about Pascal Siakam. Another big game from Siakam, 15-15, 2 assists and 3 steals. I talked about him at some point. I think I maybe wrote an article about him on Basketball Monster. With guys with surprisingly high dynasty upside, he is a top 75 player this year in 26 minutes, 11-7 with 1.3 steals. He's shooting 59% from the field and still can't hit threes. But the last couple of games from Siakam have been excellent, 37, 33, and 33 minutes. But again, we have to remember that there's been no OG Anunoby.
Hello there.
And I think when Anunoby comes back, we're going to see Siakam come back to 26 or 25 minutes. Now, that can still be valuable, and he should be on a 12-team roster. It may be yours, it may not be. But this level of production we are currently seeing from Siakam, I'm not sure it's going to be able to stick at this level, because I just don't think he's going to get that level of playing time. He's also shot in the last four games 67, 50, 63, and 75% from the field, and there's probably going to be some level of regression in those areas as we move forward. The steals have been impressive, the rebounds have been impressive. He's an impressive player, but in 25 minutes a night, is he a guy that you want to roster? Or is it going to be a guy that in 30 minutes a night, it's more realistic to have him in that sort of a scenario? Serge Ibaka started, had 16-8 with 2 steals and 3 blocks. He's killing it. As is Jonas Valanciunas, who in 17 minutes had 23 points and 2 blocks. Both guys need to be on rosters despite those limited minutes for Valanciunas. He's continuing to produce at a high level. Coming off the bench on most nights. I thought he would start against Joel Embiid, but they went with Ibaka. And Valanciunas is still a top 100 guy in only 18 minutes. His minutes aren't going to go up, so I guess the upside there is limited, but he is producing value at this point so far in the season. The next game we take a look at, the Detroit Pistons and the Boston Celtics, a bit closer than the last time these two teams matched up. Blake was big with 24 and 15, as was Drummond with 17 and 12. Reggie Bullock scored well, did very little else, 16 points. That's what he is. He's going to score. He's going to give you nothing else. So bear in mind whether that's going to be useful for you. Well, Ish Smith played more minutes than Reggie Jackson. 27 minutes for Reg, 28 minutes for Ish. They've been playing together a lot. Ish was the better performer here, 13-4-2, while Reggie had 8-2-2. The poor shooting really doomed Reggie in this game. So yeah, I think both of them are 12-team league guys. I'd have Reggie over Ish, though, pretty comfortably. While the Shark, Bruce Brown, a strong night from him, 10 points in 13 minutes. Interestingly, Langston Galloway, who Dwayne Casey had really been Dutch ruddering hard and giving him 25 minutes a night, out of the rotation completely with the Shark and Jose Calderon getting those minutes. It'll be interesting to see if Brown can remain in the rotation or if Galloway comes back in. But there was no word that there was anything wrong with Galloway in this game. Just a weird pivot from a 25-minute-per-night performance, which he never should have been getting, to what we're seeing now. But it does give encouragement, I guess, for when the Duck Luke Kennard comes back, that he can push into that 25-minute role that Galloway should never have been having. On to the Celtics, Kyrie Irving, 33 minutes for Kyrie, 31-5-5. So much Kyrie Irving panic was going on. People have a couple of bad performances and they're like, oh, I've got to trade them away. Like, you never trade someone away at their worst time. Now, you could say, oh, what if it stays this bad? What if it gets worse? But with the way Kyrie is playing, was it ever really going to get worse than what he was? I wouldn't have been. I've got him in leagues. I'd never traded him away. I never even considered it. And he bounced back. He's had a couple of decent performances. Look, he is ranked poorly outside the top 75 this season, but still averaging 16, 5, and 5. The usage is well down. The shooting is well down. And his true shooting's at 51 this season. He was 61 last season. So a massive scope for improvement. His threes are off. His twos are off. His free throws are off. Everything is off. That'll come back, and he'll push back up to that top 20, top 30 type of numbers. So I would suggest just holding on rather than trading him away. Gordon Hayward, 26 minutes. And while Hayward's limited, Marcus Morris is stepping up. Now, he's shooting the absolute lights out. 15 and 9 and 31 minutes for Marcus Morris. I don't trust that he's going to be playing this amount of minutes most games when Hayward is back in action, nor do I trust that he's going to continue shooting at this level, which he currently is. But for now, yeah, what Marcus Morris is doing is worthy of having a look as a stream type guy, but that's about it. Jason Tatum, man, his shooting is way off this season, 16 and 6. He's solid, but I don't think he's going to pay back people who drafted him with pick 40. And Jaylen Brown, 14, 5, and 3, and a triple one. Nice production from Jaylen. Still shit on the free throws. Maybe that's just never going to improve. But some nice production there from him. While Terry Rozier, 19 minutes, 3-1 and 2, not a 12-team league player in my opinion. But next week, on Friday next week, Kyrie Irving is going to miss that game against the Jazz. So Rozier will be that excellent guy that you stream in for that Friday. So bear that in mind if you want to plan that far in advance. Rozier will have a big night on that Friday. But for any other games, it's really hard to consider him someone that you want to hold on to with the way that he is being used on this Celtics team. There just isn't enough time, not enough playing time, not enough minutes for Rozier, even despite how good he thinks he is. Let's look at the next one, the Washington Wizards. Man, this was my best bet. The Wizards are absolutely shitful. They are atrocious. Beal played all right, 17-3-7, 2 steals and 3 blocks. Wall, 22-5-7 with 3 steals, but man, just atrocious. They lost to the Grizzlies, 95-107. People who have Otto Porter, they'd feel a little bit relieved because he hit 50% of his threes, 15 and 6 with 3 triples, and this is what I was preaching with Porter. I'm down on him. People that look at him as a second-round player in 9-cat leagues are wrong, in my opinion. He is not that valuable, and you would never, ever, ever draft him in that spot, but he's also not this guy who's outside the top 100. He's a 45 to 60 type guy who I do think Dwight is going to impact. But the shooting was going to come up. It was like 22% after being a 44% shooter the last 2 years. And we saw that, and it will start to normalize. With no Markieff Morris, Jeff Green started.
My name is Jeff.
29 minutes for Green, 4 and 5. But you can just leave him alone and leave him on the wire. While Oubre had 16 and 2, 2 steals and a block. Nice for him to produce right across the board. He got to the line a ton as well. So a pretty solid night from Oubre. I still think he's more of a fringe guy. And if you do have him in a 12-team league, if you're honestly assessing your roster, he's probably the worst guy on that. So that's the guy that you move on from when you need to stream or add those free agents in. For the Grizzlies, Kyle Anderson. This is why we were looking at him in that 9th or 10th round area. 5 points, 3 shots, but 11 rebounds, 3 assists, 4 steals. And more encouragingly, 28 minutes. Now, do I have faith that JB Bickerstaff is going to play him 28 minutes per night? Or maybe a little bit more now than I did at the start of the season. I am stubborn with dropping guys that I know can produce, and there are weird things happening with their production. His shooting has been way off this season, and even disengaged and still recovering from that heel injury. I would go and add Anderson over someone like Sam Decker. If they're both those guys on my waiver wire, I'm going to add Anderson, no questions asked. I'd add him over Rocket Rodney Hood as well, just for that contribution in those other areas. This is why we liked him in drafts, and it's good to see it finally happen. Shelvin Mack and Garrett Temple. 30 minutes for Mack, 36 minutes for Temple, 14, 2, and 8 for Mack, 20 and 7 for Temple. I don't really buy either of those. It's weird to see such big minutes for such just, oh, I don't know, milquetoast veterans that these two guys are. And Temple, great bloke. Just, no. Look, I don't see why we're getting so many minutes out of these guys. When Wayne Seldon plays 8 and Marshawn Brooks plays 5 minutes and Dylan Brooks plays 25. And I'll say this again, I don't think Dylan Brooks is very good. I don't think he's an NBA caliber starter, nor do I ever think he will become one. But I just don't, I know that Garrett Temple is not an NBA real caliber starter. He's a solid backup. And I'm not reading too much into this, but Mack has got that backup point guard role locked down ahead of Javon Carter. And that can be valuable just to stream in for assists in your 14 and 16 team formats. Jaren Jackson Jr., woof. What a stinker here. 4 fouls in 10 minutes for Jackson. He would have been your dud of the night, but when I look at duds of the night, My cutoff is 70% rostered in Yahoo leagues, and he was currently, fortunately for him, sitting at 69.
Giggity!
So, yeah, he just missed out on being that dud of the night. But the four fouls are obviously disappointing. I am not dropping Jaren Jackson Jr. I am holding him and, yeah, getting that upside to come through. Mike Conley, 19-3 and 7, and Gasol was excellent, 19-5 and 6 with 5 steals, as the Grizz get a big victory against the old Washington shitfulnesses. The Portland Trailblazers on the road, on a back-to-back, are 19-point victors over the Houston Rockets, 104-85. The Rockets, man, they are a disaster at the moment. And Portland, this is a huge win. 24 minutes for Yusuf Nurkic, 24 minutes for Zach Collins. An immediate split down the middle. Again, no minutes at power forward for Zach Collins, but both of these guys produced. 22-10 for Nurk. I talked about that yesterday, how he does well against Houston, did it again. Well, Collins only had the 7 points, but 4 rebounds, 3 assists, 1 steal, 2 blocks. This is why I absolutely love Collins as a dynasty prospect. He can contribute in so many categories, and when the offense isn't quite there, he's going to help you in those other areas. Now, the Blazers still have 3 more games this week, so if he is on your wire, you can go and scoop him. But he is still going to be limited in terms of upside because Nurkic is there. I think he's their starting center next season, Zach Collins. I just don't think that change will happen this year. As much as I love him, it always happens. I love these guys. And then the hype on some of them, you know, exceeds what I feel about them. And I feel weird having to push back against, you know, the value of some of these guys who I do really like with Collins. But you've got to try and look at it. And, you know, where's the opportunity? Will he jump ahead of Nurkic this season? And it seems unlikely.
Sometimes it may be good, sometimes it may be shit.
The Chief, Al-Farouq Aminu, he was shit. 5-6 in 28 minutes. He is not a must-roster 12-team league player, in my opinion. Bounce back from Dame, 22-3-7. McCollum, just, I don't know, CJ's just not quite there. That guy who, yeah, was sniffing top 30 value a couple of years ago, 19-4-2. At least the efficiency was there for CJ. He just isn't that same guy, currently ranked outside the top 120. But he will be better than that moving forward. For the Rockets, just a disaster. Melo, 8-4 in 31 minutes. If Melo, he was 2 of 12 from the field. If he can't produce when James Harden is out, then he's not going to be a 12-team league guy. Harden should be back pretty soon. So move on from Melo there. Eric Gordon cannot hit a single shot. This will get better. But when everyone is healthy, Gordon is outside a top 100 player, in my opinion. So just keep an eye on that. Gaz Clark, 19 minutes for Gary, 11-4 with 3 triples and a block. Now, this is obviously very deep league stuff, but Clark has had a couple of games this season where he's seen first quarter minutes, 19 minutes here. Marquise Chris is terrible. Isaiah Hartenstein is limited. Melo struggles. Jim Ennis is out. Clark is that really deep league guy. He's a two-way player, but he's someone to watch as someone who translated well coming out of Cincinnati, and he's shown it so far in his NBA debut. As Marquise Chris made his season debut, 4 points in 8 minutes in year. No, we're talking, you know, 80 team leagues, maybe, for Chris. He's so bad. Let's go on to the last game of the night. The LA Clippers and the Oklahoma City Thunder. A pretty significant victory here for the Thunder, 128-110. Avery Bradley got to 30 minutes, but couldn't replicate what he did last time out. He is a 14 team league player, while Montrezl Harrell, the table. The free throws were disgusting, 4 of 9, but still played the most minutes out of all the centers, 22 for him, 10 minutes for Boban Marjanovic, and 19 minutes for Gortat. Harrell is the guy that you have on your team over those guys, and he should be a 12-team league player. He was close to the dud of the night as well, but like Jaren Jackson Jr., his percentage rostered is at 69%.
Giggity!
Toby Harris was okay, but the Rooster was the best performer for the Clippers, 27 points for Danilo Gallinari in his 26 minutes, while Beverly only 4 points, 7 rebounds, 6 assists. That's okay production. He is a real fringe 12-team league guy. Well, it wasn't a great night from Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. If I grabbed him, I am still holding Shai. I just hope that we get this starting position come, or at least a 27, 28 minutes. But if I'm in a desperate situation where I've lost my first 2 weeks and I'm struggling again, then maybe you move on from Shai. For the Thunder, Paulie George, 32-12, and Russ had 32, 4-8 with 3 steals. Big performances there, and Steven Adams was back from his one-game absence due to a calf issue, 38 minutes, 18-10, 3 steals and a block. And as I mentioned, when Adams comes back, you get nothing out of Nerlens Noel. 9 minutes, 6 fouls for Nerlens Noel, fouled out, 2-2. If you grabbed him after that last performance, you can go ahead and cut him now. He's just not going to play next to Adams, and they're not going to reduce Steven Adams' minutes to get Nerlens Noel into the game. That's just not going to happen. 25 minutes for Schroeder, 15-2-3. 15 points is nice. It's the 25 minutes that's a concern. And with everyone back and then with Robertson coming back eventually, if he's not getting 30 minutes a night, I don't see Schroeder as being a 12-team league player. Not much else happening. MC Hamidou Diallo came back from his suspension, 4 points in 11 minutes, but not much else to really talk about there with the old Oklahoma City Thunder. All right, before we head into the DFS portion of the show, I just want to go through lists of some guys who are currently overperforming what I think they're going to do rest of the season and some guys who are underperforming, maybe giving you some sell high, buy low type targets. So let's look at those guys now. The guys who I look at as underperforming at the moment, the 239th ranked player at the moment is Eric Gordon. As I said before, I don't necessarily think he's going to be a top 100 guy, but I'm pretty confident his shooting is going to be better than where it currently sits, which is at not a good level for big Eric. He's at 31% from the field and 23% from three. And you'll see so many of these underperforming guys are based on their shooting. So I think Gordon will increase himself from there and push up. Yeah, so it might be an opportunity to grab him if he is on waivers, depending on who you're dropping. Kyle Anderson as well, outside the top 200. We saw a glimpse of that today. I would add him off the waivers. He's the 203rd ranked player so far. Gordy Haywood at 194. I think that's a large portion of that is to do with the minutes, only 24.5 per game, but also not shooting well. 41% from the field, 50% from the line. Not as engaged in terms of assists, 1.7. It's a long way back from this leg ankle injury that he had, and he is struggling with that at the moment. So I think he is somewhat of a buy low guy, but I wouldn't be paying, you know, the top 50 type of value that he might be able to return. Evan Fournier also struggling, only 29 minutes per game. He's the 191st ranked player. He is still averaging 15-4, but it's the shooting that's way off. 37% from the field on 15 attempts. He's a massive, massive hit to his value, and only 28% from three. If those numbers come up, then he jumps back up into that top 100, yeah, pretty comfortably, I believe. CJ McCollum, another guy who's really being impacted by his poor shooting. He's the 121st ranked player, 41% from the field only. And one of the big, you know, characteristics of CJ's game over the last couple of years was hitting a high percentage of his twos. He's only at 42% there. The threes are fine. He's at 40%. But he's just not hitting those two-pointers at that high level, averaging 19, 4, and 2. His assists are way down, and he's not getting any steals. Now, he's not a high steals guy, but 0.3 is very, very small. He needs to push it back to 0.8 or 0.9. So you could look at him as a buy low, because I do think the two-point percentage will increase. It was down last season, but not this low, and that steal number should jump up. But I'm not as sure about him with the assists, and I wouldn't be paying top 30, top 40, or even top 50 value. I think he probably finishes this season outside the top 60, but definitely inside the top 120. Jeff Teague.
My name is Jeff.
His value is almost exclusively tied to the shooting, 36 and 32 as his percentages. He's still averaging 13 and 7 assists with one steal, but it's those percentages which is really hurting his value, especially that field goal percentage. He's only playing 30 minutes a night as well, as Tom Thibodeau is really riding the Derrick Rose MVP train, and that is hurting Teague to some degree, but I think that shooting's going to come back and he pushes back inside the top 100. He's 109th at the moment. And a name you might be surprised to see here is LaMarcus Aldridge, who is the 96th ranked player. And you go, Josh, he's averaging 20 and 10, and that's true, he is, and 1.3 blocks, but the percentages are way off. Now, some people really, really value player rankings from Basketball Monster, Player Raider, stuff on ESPN, Yahoo ranks, and they'll see Aldridge down low, and that's because he's shooting 40% from the field. He hasn't hit a single three all season, and he's at 72% from the line for a true shooting at 47%. Now, one of Aldridge's biggest calling cards was a high efficiency big, a 52 and 82 type of guy, not a 40 and 72 type of a player. So there is massive scope. His usage is up. He could easily be a 25 and 10 guy in a top 30. So if you know someone in your league that has him and is disappointed, oh man, he's killing my percentages, which he is at the moment, there's no doubt about that, buy low, because it's not going to stick that long, I don't think, for Aldridge. And the last one we talk about here is Victor Oladipo as an underperforming guy, still averaging 22 points per game, but the 53rd ranked player, because his free throws are way out of there, 55%, that has to improve. He's also, and this is something I talked about until you were probably sick of hearing it from me, is I didn't think he could keep up a 2.7 steals per game or over a block per game, and so far, he can't. 1.4 steals, 0.3 blocks, plus a putrid free throw percentage has taken Oladipo away from being that end of the first start of the second round guy to being outside the top 50. I have confidence that the steals will push closer up to 2 and the free throws will jump back up, but I don't think he's going back to that top 10 number. He's a mid-second round type of upside guy, but it has been a struggle, even though if you just look at 3 categories, rebounds, points, and assists, you go, oh, man, 22, 6, and 5, he's fine. But he's not, because those other areas that push him to be top 10 are nowhere near where they were last season. On the flip side of that, we'll look at some guys who are overperforming. Their current or their rank is overperforming where I think they're going to end up. And the first one of those is Nick Vucevic at number 13. It's coming on 57% shooting, averaging 19 and 11. The assists are up, but it's mainly that really high field goal percentage from Vuc, which I do imagine will come down. And then if he gets traded, then the arse is going to completely fall out of his value. Zachy LaVine at 22, averaging almost over 28 points per game, but 52% shooting, there's no way. He's hitting 59% of his two-pointers. That just won't continue at that level. So we're going to see a pretty significant plummet in his value. Probably drops him around to that 50-type mark, I would guess, taking a couple of points away. And he was at 38% field goals last year, a terrible shooter. He hasn't become the best shooter of all time all of a sudden. So I'd expect a drop-off from Zachy. And Nemanja Bjelica at number 29, averaging 15 and 6. 2 threes, 3 assists, 1.5 steals, and you know, ridiculous shooting as well. 55% from 3. That is going to fall off from Bjelica. And then there's the worry that maybe some of the minutes fall down. Rudy Gay at 41. He is shooting 67% on 3s. So that's a cause for concern. Everything else doesn't look too bad. 14 and 8.5. But he's the 41st ranked player because his field goal percentage is so high based on those 3s. And he's also hitting over his 3 per game. He still can be maybe a top 70 guy, but probably not a top 40 player. And Zach Collins, who we talked about earlier, he's ranked 46th on the back of 2 blocks per game and 65% and 89% from the line. Now, the 65-89, that actually might be real. I'm not sure 2 blocks in 21 minutes is all that realistic to continue, and I don't think he's going to remain a top 50 guy, nor do I think Scooter Magruder is, who's 47th, and that's coming on pretty high scoring or high volume. 5 threes a game, 50%, no way. It's going to drop off, and that's going to impact his scoring, his threes, and his field goal percentage, and probably pushes him back to top 100 rather than top 50. Garrett Temple at 81. He's shooting, again, 52% on threes. That's going to hurt his value. And if he's not banging those threes in, the minutes will start to decline. He's averaging 14 and 4 with 1 assist and under a steal. So nothing too exciting. If someone wants Garrett Temple and you've got him in a 12-team league, I'd be more than happy to let him go there. Well, TJ Warren is the 83rd ranked player. And surprise, surprise, it comes because he's shooting 48% from 3 on high volume. Only 23 minutes per game. They're not playing him over Ryan Anderson, which is ridiculous, but it's what's happening. And yeah, he's scoring 15 a game, but again, if those 3s go away and he goes back to being a 25% shooter, which I don't think he will, but I also know that he won't remain a 48% shooter, then a lot of his value is going to disappear. No assists, no steals, no blocks, low rebounds, low minutes. I don't think he's going to be able to stick as that top 100 player. Let's move in and talk DFS now for Wednesday, but quickly a recap on Tuesday. DraftKings perfect lineup, Tone Parker, 42.75, the fun guy.
I'm a fun guy.
Kawhi Leonard, 54.75, Paulie George, 58, Tristan Thompson, 40.75, Alex Len, 42.75, Budrick Hield, 46.25, Siakam had 42.75, and Joel Embiid, 54.75 for a total of 382.75, and that cost $49,600. On FanDuel, Tone Parker had 39.7, Westbrook 59.3, Budrick 43.7, Terry Ross 30.4, the fun guy had 57.4, Paulie George 54.4, Serge Ibaka 40.1, Siakam 42, and Alex Len 45.3 for a total of 412.3, and that cost $59,800. Let's look at a 7-game slate now for Wednesday, really low-volume Wednesday. We'll talk about FanDuel pricing mainly today. The first game is Detroit and Brooklyn. The Pistons are the only team on a back-to-back for Wednesday, just narrowly beaten by the Celtics today. Point guards, we're looking at D'Angelo Russell at $7,000. He struggled last game, and he is a little bit of a one-game-off, one-game-on type of a guy. So while I don't like him for cash, I do think he's got the ability to push towards 35 or 40 points, and that could make him a tournament option. Dinwiddie's at $5,500, and even last game, where he was good. Only 28 points. I don't really see any upside there. Ish Smith at $4,600, and Reggie Jackson at $6,300 don't offer me all that much either. The shooting guards, the blue swimmers at 3,900, always just a tournament guy. Coming off the bench, though, very little appeal. While Reggie Bullock at 4,300, he scores and he does nothing else, and that is not what you want for DFS. Caris LeVert's at 7,200. He has fallen off quite considerably with just a 28-point average over the last five because he's not shooting at an unsustainable level. The minutes are fine, the production's all right, but he's also not worth a $7,000 price tag. Jumpin' Joe Harris, Langston Galloway out of the rotation today. Small forward, Stan Johnson, 4,300, nah. Jared Dudley, Glenn Robinson, nah. Power forwards, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, big game last time for Rondae. He's up to 6,000 now. He had 32 points in 27 minutes, looked really, really solid there. I was down on him a couple of days ago. I thought, well, what are they going to do with him? And then he did prove me wrong. He's a guy that, I don't have huge upside hopes for him. I do think he can be solid enough, and I think this is an opportunity to use him on a slate where value is pretty hard to come by. While Blakey Griffin at 8,800, not his best performances lately. He was solid last game, stunk the last game, the game before that against the old Celtics. But 8,800 against the Nets would put him in GPP categorization. At center, Jarrett Allen has done well against the Pistons in the past, a 38-point average. Nice price tag, 6,600. I'm okay with that. Well, Drummond is a 50-point option here, I think, against the Nets. He's averaging 49 the last three times out, 9,500 for Drummo. Love the matchup. I think he's a pretty strong cash play. Over on the old FanDuel for DraftKings, Drummond at 9,000, real strong. D'Angelo at 5,900, I really like that for cash as well. Jarrett Allen and Rondae, cheap prices, 53 and 5,200 as well. A little bit more value for Caris LeVert on DraftKings and Dinwiddie at 4,800. But yeah, in general, your DraftKings pricing is a lot weaker than the FanDuel pricing. Let's go to the next game, the Utah Jazz and the Minnesota Timberwolves. The Jazz are favored by 2.5 points. The total is 222.5. We don't know the status of Andy Wiggins at this point. If he is out, then we look to Josh Okogie again. If Wiggins plays, I don't think Okogie is going to get anywhere near enough minutes to be useful. And for the Jazz, Jay Crowder is probable, but Derek Favors is questionable with that knee that caused him to miss last game, and Alec Burks is questionable again with that hand issue. The point guards, ravishing Rick Rubio against his former team, 6,300. He's had that one real monster and then struggled in all the others. I wouldn't be putting a huge amount of faith in Rubio here, averaging 24 the times that he played against Minnesota last season, so that's not really great. Tournament only, maybe, if you really subscribe to the revenge game theory. 6,500 for Jeff Teague, and as I just detailed earlier, his shot is just way, way off. There are way better options, I think, than Jeff at 6,500. And Derrick Rose, I actually don't mind Derrick Rose. I think he's a strong cash play at 5,500. Tom Thibodeau says he wants to give him 26 to 28 minutes a night, which is increasing his minutes, so that's something to bear in mind. He's getting assists now. He's got a solid floor. I think you use him. I think he's a usable guy. At shooting guard, the Donovan Mitchell, 8,200. Just can't really get back into that same groove as he had last season. He had that 150-pointer, which was solid, but not quite there. Again, a tight pricing day means he's in play, but he's not a high priority. I much prefer Jim Butler at 9,600, who's given you 45 almost every single night. Yeah, the price is more expensive for Butler over Mitchell, but I'd happily go in that direction. At small four, Jay Crowder's at 4,900. I like Crowder. We assume he's going to play, and I assume that Favors is going to miss. Now, Favors plays, it takes a little bit away from Crowder, but I do like his GPP upside. I like him on DraftKings. I like him on FanDuel as well. Ingles at 6,100, I think, is a little too highly priced. Favors at 5,200 as a power forward, that's a no from me. Taj Gibson at 54 has got a decently solid floor, but not really a tournament guy, so maybe for cash. But his minutes are down this season, only playing about 28 minutes a night for the season. At center, Townsie really, really played well against the Lakers, but big men can really eviscerate that front court. $9,000 for Townsie, at 63 last time out. He has struggled really against Rudy Gobert, 32 average against him over the last three meetings. So I'm not looking at him as a cash guy. Look, he's obviously a 55-point upside player, probably even higher. Probably not that high against the Jazz, but I wouldn't want to be using Towns in cash. As for Gobert at 9,100, yeah, Towns has slowed him down a little bit in the past, but I still think that this is a 50-point option for Gobert, and I'm in on looking at him. Over on DraftKings, pretty similar stuff. Butler's a strong cash guy at 82. 8,400 for Towns is really appealing, but again, that Gobert factor wants me to fade and only restrict him to tournaments, and Teague the same. I like Teague actually more on DraftKings. 5,400 There is some upside there, as I mentioned. Okogie's the guy we look at if Wiggins is out, but if Wiggins is playing, I don't think we can look at Joshy really too much at all. And Rubio at 5,600 is more appealing on DraftKings than we'd look at him on FanDuel. Let's go to the next game. We're talking about the Denver Nuggets and the Chicago Bulls. The Nuggets are favored by 7.5, and the total is 226.5, the second largest total of the day. The Nuggets, this is the Bulls team that got absolutely destroyed by the Warriors last time out.
Hello, darkness, my old friend.
Yeah. And Denver's offense is as good, maybe marginally worse than the Warriors' offense. It's still pretty bloody good. This could get real ugly. Big men have been able to feast against the Bulls so far this season as well. So I think there's some pretty interesting DFS options here. Let's start with the point guards. The Blue Arrow, Jamal Murray, 7,400. He has been cranking the last couple of games, 47 last time out. Yeah, pretty solid matchup with Cameron Payne trying to guard him, so he's totally fine to use. While Payne at 5,100, the minutes have been down. The production's been all right. 25 last game for Payne, but really more of a tournament guy. While Archer Jackano, yeah, that's going to be a no from me. Monty Morris at 4,600. He let people down who rostered him last time. 17 points in 24 minutes, and that's because the shots didn't fall. Now, against this absolutely piss-poor Chicago defense, there is an option that maybe he gets wide-open shots and carves it up, but I wouldn't be looking at Morris as much more than a GPP guy. Justin Holiday at 5,500, really disappointed against the Warriors, but I think he can get back on track and be useful enough here. Well, Zach LaVine at 8,500. LaVine's last couple of games have been good, but they haven't been 8,500 good, averaging just 34 points over the last three, and I think you'll find better options than spending 85 on LaVine, because when the shit hits, when the shooting isn't there, then he's not going to get to that level. I feel pretty confident in saying that.
Nice, Gary!
7,400 for Gaz Harris. He's just cranking out 35 pluses every night. He had 48 last time out. Is LaVine stopping him? Probably not. I'm in on Harris here. I really like that option. And Malik Beasley played well last time. 3,600, worthy of that punt position on FanDuel. 30 minutes, 21 points last time out. Looked really good. Now Mike Malone, in his reason, he said he's going to stay with Torrey Craig as the starting small forward because, oh, we're 6-1 with Craig starting. Cool. Doesn't mean it's the right thing. But Beasley's still got a chance to take Wancho's minutes and take a lot of Craig's minutes. So I think he's a viable option here at that almost minimum salary. While Antonio Blakeney got a lot of garbage time run against the Warriors. Had 25 points, but he's not interesting to me. Chandler Hutchison, 3,800. He's starting and doing jack shit with it, so fade that. Well, Jabari Parker at 7,500. I think Parker's actually pretty good value. 37 against the Warriors, 42 average against the Nuggets the last three times he's played them as a member of the Bucks. Opportunities, shots, they're all going to be here for Jabari. So I think he's worthwhile looking at that $7,500 price. The power forwards, Wendell Carter Jr. at 6,800. 32 points against the Warriors is nothing to sneeze at. Now, Nikola Jokic is a tough challenge. So I'd look at him as a tournament guy, especially with that salary at 6,800, which is pretty elevated. Trey Lyles at 4,400, he can score, and we know that teams can score against the Bulls. So 4,400 gives him a 30-point upside. I like it for tournaments. While Paulie Millsap, normally I wouldn't be in on Millsap, but against the Bulls, man, he kills them. The Bulls give up big numbers to big men. I'm actually in on using Millsap, which is maybe going to be the only time I say that this season. And of course, I'm in on Nikola Jokic.
Pretty good. Pretty, 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 pretty good.
Jokic only averages 24 minutes a night the last three times against the Bulls. 36 points in that time, of course. So we should be looking at a 50-point display against a team who's got no real way of stopping him. Then your other centers are Felizio and Mason Plumlee. Don't think we need to get too invested in looking at them. On the old DraftKings, a lot that I like here. Jokic at 9,700 is great. Jabari at 6,000 is fantastic. LaVine at 7,400 I'm in on. Gaz Harris at 6,900.
Giggity!
Maybe not quite as aggressive. Carter at 4,900. Now, while it's a hard matchup, I love him at 4,900, Wendell Carter. And Millsap at 58 is also a strong option over on DraftKings. Let's go through to the next game now. It's the Indiana Pacers and the New York Knicks. The Pacers are favored by 5.5, and the total is a lowly 211.5 points. The Knicks will likely stick with that same starting lineup. So Mitchell Robinson, Noah Vonleh, front court, Nil Akina, Hardaway, and Damo Dotson as the 1, 2, and 3. The news is that Kevin Knox is out, but he could be targeting Friday for his return. So it looks like he's coming back ahead of schedule. So keep an eye on that. Ntilikina looks so much better as a point guard. He's at 5,100. I think he's actually worth looking at here. 31 points last game, scoring well. Ball in his hands, much, much better option there than what he was playing at small forward. Well, Daz Collison really killed it last time out, 34 points, but played a ton of minutes. I'm not sure that's going to stick, and therefore I think you could be disappointed with Collison, but 5,300 is not a bad price. I wouldn't shy away from it completely. I would shy away from Trey Burke, though. Shooting guards, Damo Dotson, 5,000, has fallen off a bit in the starting lineup, and probably more tournaments than anything. Well, Timmy Hardaway at 7,000, strong game against the Nets. Another decent opportunity. I think he's worth looking at as a cash option from New York. While Oladipo's at 9,400. Has really struggled, as I mentioned earlier, but still getting you 44 points a night. So it's a pretty good cash ability. And I don't think Timmy Hardaway is really going to be able to slow him down, although they'll probably put Ntilikina on him for big chunks of the game. At small forward, Tyreek at 53, that's a no. 45 for Boyan, that's a no. Hezonja at 38, that's a no as well. So in other words, no, you don't want the small forwards in this game. Noel Vonleh, 5,300. I think his upside's limited, but he'll start at power forward, and I think he's a strong cash play at that price. 28 points against the Knicks, against the Nets, sorry, averaging 25 over his last five. A 25-point floor is okay for cash, again, with pretty tightish-type pricing. And Thaddeus Young at 5,600 has been playing fairly well. A great opportunity for Thad, who does well against the Knicks. I don't mind throwing him into a tournament. And Sabonis at 53, much like Vonleh, a strong cash play who should get you 25 most nights. So I think both Sabonis and Vonleh are cash options at the power forward position. Enes Kanter, 7,100. He had 33 points in his bench role last time. I'm not so certain that he's worth it at 7,100. I would much rather take a $4,400 flyer on Mitchell Robinson, who had 22 points in only 15 minutes last time. He played 30 minutes against the Warriors, so somewhere in the middle, 22, 23 minutes might give you 26, 27 points, which I think is pretty good value at 4,400. And Miles Turner at 58. 34 points last time for Turner on the back of three blocks. Maybe for a tournament for Turner, I don't really have much faith in him being able to do a huge amount with the minutes he's being allocated. On DraftKings, Vonleh at 43 again. Ntilikina at 41 is strong. Mitchell Robinson at 36 is pretty good as well. Yeah, Hardaway and Oladipo, I'm not as into them on DraftKings as I am on FanDuel. And Sabonis at 58, still got that decent cash floor, but the price is higher, as those of you who can count will attest. The next one, the Warriors and the Pelicans. There's no spread or total for this one because we don't know if Anthony Davis is playing. Lord Alfred Payton is out. Darius Miller is doubtful. Julius Randle is probable. And Davis is questionable. Now, if Alvin Gentry decides to go to Jahlil Okafor against the Warriors to start, that could be an absolute disaster. They have to put Randle in there. Or even if Okafor starts, he'll play 10 minutes. And the other question is, what happens at point guard? Last time out, we had Drew Holiday shift across and Solomon Hill start. Hill was disgusting, and Frank Jackson played better. Now, maybe putting Solomon Hill in there to guard Kevin Durant is worth looking at. But Jackson's got to get... He got the bulk of the minutes over Tim Frazier and over Ian Clark in the last time out against the Nuggets, I think, for the Pelicans. Jackson is in play, but we don't know exactly what direction that Gentry is going to go in. Steph's at 9,900. Man, he is just lighting shit on fire every time he is out on the court. So he's definitely worth looking at there. Then you've got the Frazier-Frank Jackson type combination here. Timmy Frazier had a decent game last time out, but it'd be Frank Jackson, who is listed as a shooting guard, that I would look at as a minimum salary option. Shooting guards, Drew is at 8,300. I think Drew can get 40 here. I think he's a solid cash option, tournament upside there for him as well. While Klay Thompson had 59 points in that ridiculous outing last time. 6,600 for Klay. The likelihood of that happening is zero. It happening again is zero. So tournament maybe, but I still don't feel super interested in Klay here. Etwan Moore's at 4,400. I don't like that at all. I don't think there's much upside there. While Kevin Durant at 10,800. Durant's good for 49 points, 48 points, but is he good for 55? That's where I worry about him. And if Davis is out, this could get ugly, and that's going to limit him. I will take that 9,900 of Steph over the 10,800 of Durant. And Nikola Mirotic at 7,700 has killed the Warriors in the past, put up big lines. I actually don't mind him here. And if Davis is out, I think he actually transforms into a pretty solid cash option. Alphonso McKinney had 36 points against the Bulls. He's at 3,700. The likelihood of that happening is pretty limited. There was no Sean Livingston, and Iguodala played like 5 minutes, so that enabled McKinney to play more. Livingston is out, but Iguodala should be back. So maybe you throw McKinney into a tournament, because I've been talking about how well he's been playing and getting rotation minutes, but that level of production is probably going to be unlikely. Power forward Draymond Green's at 7,600. He's not scoring, but he's getting you that sort of level of production. I don't mind 76 for him for cash. I'm just not sure there's huge amounts of reliability in it. Davis at 12.8. If Davis plays, I like him at 12.8 pretty clearly. And then the center situation. Who knows what Steve Kerr is going to do?
You can call me Coach Steve.
Oh, sorry, I don't know what Coach Steve is going to do here. So you can't really rely on Damo Jones or Kevon Looney and Jordan Bell. If Davis plays, I don't think they'll get Bell really into the game at all. It'll be more Jones and Looney and very limited value in those guys. And of course, if Jahlil Okafor is pushed into action against the Golden State Warriors, it could get pretty ugly. Although he did play well against the Nuggets, so I have to give him credit there. I like Curry and Durant on DraftKings, both under 10,000. Like Curry more than Durant, but still really, really good options. And Davis at 11.4. If he plays, that's a really, really strong price, assuming he plays. But at this point, I'd lean towards Davis being out, but we just don't know at this early stage. A couple of games to go here before we're out for the day. The San Antonio Spurs and the Phoenix Suns. Devin Booker is listed as doubtful. Josh Jackson and Isaiah Kanan are both questionable. So that really opens things up in that backcourt. Jackson will start if Booker is out. And then if Jackson's out, is it Troy Daniels? Is it McCall Bridges? If Isaiah Kanan's out, is it Ali Okobo who jumps in? So there could be a lot of value on this Phoenix team. No, I don't know why there's no spread or total, because we're you know, under the assumption that Devin Booker's not playing at this point. 3,900 for Isaiah Kanan. His high score this season is 24 points. He is battling an ankle injury. I think he's interesting as a GPP guy, but he's not really that great of a player, and I don't think he's going to come out with a 35-pointer or anything like that. Could very well be wrong, but I just don't really see too much there with him. Brittany Forbes at 4,000, much like Reggie Bullock, he's a worse version. He scores and does nothing else, and that's not really a great DFS type of an option. And then you've got Ali Okobo, who had 33 points last time, minimum salary. I love him in FanDuel. I hope he gets the bulk of the minutes. If we're looking at a guy at late game of the night and we don't know if Kanan's playing, then Okobo in there, and that could be a 30-pointer. That could be a real game changer for that position. Of course, you go out and not play at all because Kokoschkov, you know, is making poor decisions, which he's made a few of this season, even though his offense looks pretty sexy out there. At shooting guard, DeMar DeRozan, 9,700. This guy is just crushing it every night. 62 points last time out, and who the hell is going to stop him on the Suns? I think this is another 50-point opportunity for DeRozan. Bellinelli, Crawford, Daniels. In minimum salary, Troy Daniels, if you have Jackson and Kanan out along with Booker, he can bang in 7 or 8 threes, and that could be a weird low percentage tournament type of an option. Good old Troy Daniels. For the small forwards, Ariza, he just doesn't, no upside, low floor. McCall Bridges is the one I'm interested in. Minimum salary for McCall. He should be getting minutes over Josh Jackson anyway, but we could have Jackson out along with Booker, and maybe we get 26 or 27 out of Bridges. Give you 22 or 23 points. I think he's an interesting tournament option. Dante Cunningham and Tony Warren Jr. Yeah, Warren had 31 points last time out in only 22 minutes. At 5,100, he's shooting well, but if the shot's not there, then what's he going to provide? I don't really see the upside in either of those guys. Rudy Gay at 7,000. I actually like Rudy Gay here. He's giving you a comfortable 38 over the last three games. It's a great opportunity again for him. Power forward, Aldridge, 8,500, should absolutely eat here. 45 points is what we're looking at. Well, Josh Jackson, weirdly listed as a power forward at 3,700, is a great tournament play. Now, I think he's shithouse. I think he's terrible, but he could bludgeon his way if a lot of guys are out into 25, 30 points. And at 3,700, that could be a real game changer. But he is terrible. At this point, he's terrible. You can't argue with that. Someone will, though. At center, DeAndre Ayton, 8,100. Spurs matchup could be tough, but he's been getting you pretty strong numbers. I think that's a relatively safe floor for Ayton, especially with Booker out. He should be getting a lot of usage, and he won't necessarily get it, but he should be. And that does put him in play in this one. Over on DraftKings, Aldridge and Ayton are the two guys I look at. 7,100 for DeAndre Ayton is a real strong option. And then Gay at 6,100 I like quite a bit as well. And then you've got those flyer types like Bridges and Kanan and Okobo, depending on how those injury type scenarios play themselves out. Last game of the night is the Dallas Mavericks and the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers are favored by 6.5 and the total is 235 points. Lonzo's at 6,100, just dreadful last time. I would throw him to go contrarian into a GPP because he could have a 40-pointer. He was really disappointing, but this is a great opportunity for Lonzo to come out and have a 35-40-pointer. His percentage rostered will be very, very low, and that's something that might work. While Dennis Smith has been playing well, 6,500, up-tempo game. I'm in on Smith here at 6,500. Barea and Rondo. Rondo at 5,800 has been playing well, but I don't think 5,800 is the right price for him. Shooting guards, Wes Matthews, 4,900. Very, very few low-priced guys who you feel an element of confidence with on FanDuel. And Matthews is one of those players that I pay some attention to. He's a GPP type of a guy moreover. But could he get to 30 points? Yeah. The hitman, Josh Hart, not with the way the lineup is currently going. Well, Luka Doncic at 8,000. That might be a bit high for Doncic. He did have 47 last time out against the Raptors, so he can obviously do it, but I'm not ready to go at 8,000 with him just yet. The pencil, Harrison Barnes at 5,900. I think that's a solid floor play, and with a decent level of upside, he had 29 in his second game back, so 5,900 is not a bad price for Harrison Barnes. While LeBron James. 12,400. You should be getting close to 60 from LeBron. Yeah, the Mavericks have defended him well in the past, so he's not my highest priority high price guy of the night. Ingram, 7,100 as a power forward. Strong game last time out. A little bit unrealistic with the shooting, so I'm not totally in on Ingram. More for tournaments, I believe. While the future MVP, Kyle Kuzma, I think is too highly priced. Dwight Powell, Maxi Kleber, John Williams, no. At center, JaVale's at 7,000. That is very high. DeAndre Jordan's at 8,300. Centers have absolutely pantsed the Lakers, so I really like DeAndre at that $8,300 mark. On DraftKings, this is a real stackable game because of that high pace, 235 total. LeBron, DeAndre, Doncic, Ingram, JaVale, Dennis Smith, Lonzo. I think they're all value. You know, Lonzo comes in at 5,000. I'm really happy to use that on DraftKings, and all those other guys are in pretty favorable situations as well. All right, let's go into the studs and values to wrap this up. On DraftKings, my best start is Jokic at 9,700 against the Bulls, and my value guy is Wendell Carter at 4,900. On FanDuel, my best start is LaMarcus Aldridge at 8,500 with a good matchup against Phoenix. And my best value guy, as I just mentioned, was Wesley Matthews at 4,900. On Yahoo, my start is Oladipo down at $36. It's a pretty nice price for Vic there. Good matchup against the Knicks as well. And my best value is $11 for Frank Ntilikina, just $1 above minimum. On Moneyball, my stud of the day is DeAndre Jordan at 8,500. And my value play is Wes Matthews at 5,200. And at the time of me recording this, DraftStars does not have their slate up, so I can't give you anything for that. My best bet of today is the over between the Knicks and the Pacers. It's set at 211.5. I think that will go over. Hopefully it does. Follow me, guys, on Twitter at @RedRock_Beeble and the Locked On Network at LockedOnNBAnet. Subscribe, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify, YouTube. Smash the thumbs up. Smash the subscribe button. Hit the bell so you're notified when the videos go live. Leave a comment below. Tweet at me, you know all the good stuff. Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Quincy Pondexter.